I keep getting saved over and over again here, and it's been glorious. I'm excited to be a part of all this.
Webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment that you saw yourself in God and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for the 21st of May 2015, coming to you from the home of Redemptionism, where we love every train of thought coming out of the Station of Freedom. We're coming to you from the newly painted GR Studios right here in Nashville, Tennessee, where, with Frank Zappa, we say, a mind is like a parachute. It doesn't work unless it's open. And here from Houston, Texas, is that great unteacher himself, the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams. G'day, Mr. William. G'day, Mr. Michael. G'day, Mr.
G'day, Mister.
How the heck are you?
You taught me what that all meant last time, remember?
I did.
So you just insulted me in three ways this morning.
Every way I could think of at the time. I'm sorry it was only three. I didn't have time to prepare for more. That's like my grandmother said to me when I was a kid. She used to keep a cake in this special kind of a real dark bread box, it was. And once she said to me, I left four pieces of cake in there and now I only see two. Why is that, Donald? And I said, because it was dark and I didn't see the other two. Hey, mate, we are freshly home from Cullman, Alabama.
We are rubbing the sleep out of our eyes and thinking back on the time that we had with the folks there. Let me start out with this. We saw a lot of folks, but Pastor Ted Winsett and his wife. I've met them and been friends with them, and we've had a chance to spend time together on a handful of occasions, but just a handful. But I've never met two people that every time I meet them, I like them better.
That's sweet.
Ted Winsett and Pat being pastors there at that church, and I think I've made a decision.
What, you going to start going to church there?
Ted Winsett and Pat Winsett are now my pastors. I didn't ask them if they would be. I'm just imposing myself. And if anybody had a heart to do and be for other people, all that they can do and be for others, it is these two people. I'm just, I can't wait to see them again because I know I'm going to love them even more then. So. And also, of course, at the meetings, finding Barry Laney there once again. Goodness gracious, he's been a friend of ours for quite some time. He's not as good looking as Pat, but, I mean, you know, he'll...
Well, he got lumps in all the other places, mate. That's his problem. His lumps are wrong.
But when you get a direct look from Barry Laney, you've been directly looked at.
Haven't you, though?
Yeah, I've never felt more engaged just by a glance with anyone more than Barry, for sure. And, of course, we could take everybody by name. And it was good to see Judy Tanini there, been a lifelong friend of the Gospel Revolution. And she put effort into getting there. She doesn't live that far away, but from where we were there in Cullman, but it was really good to see her. And as it is with mentioning names, you start doing it, you're going to leave somebody out, but we're leaving everybody else out. We want, but not deliberately.
Well, except for one, I can't tell. It's very odd. I might get fired if I say this. I was really excited to meet Jeff Robertson for the first time.
I wasn't even that excited to meet you for the first time. And I have no way of knowing what to even make of that. So maybe there'll be a few trips to Florida in my future. But we met old friends, made new friends. It was such a great trip.
Yeah, it really was. We began to wade into some what I thought was going to be deep waters as far as the teaching. But as usual, I think everybody in the Gospel Revolution's ahead of me on this one. So I was a bit deflated. You know, I was thinking I was wading into deep waters here, but I didn't get any of the reactions of, oh, Mike, oh my gosh, oh, what a wonderful revelation. Oh, I never saw that. Oh, and coming up afterwards and, you know, the oohs and ahs in the middle of the sessions. I'm used to kind of dropping bombs on people and them getting really overly excited about what they're hearing.
But that didn't happen?
No, it really did. And the Gospel Revolution is such a solid construct of thought that has resolved so many things. You know, you think of everybody, the teachings we used to have about us all being one mind and of one accord. You know, it's all thinking alike.
And we were anything but.
Yes. And if we were one mind about anything, it was only about what we had been told to think.
Well, I reckon if we were of one mind about anything, it was about how that you weren't in the same one mind as I was.
Exactly. This group is so much in one mind, they're in one mind about what they hadn't thought about yet.
Mike, this week we have a couple of stories, and they're very short. So, now, family, last week we recorded twice as much as we needed for last week, and so a lot of what we've got this week we recorded last week, but we're just going to throw in a couple of extra stories to make you know that we're actually always on top of the ball and we're never missing. Here we are on www.addictinginfo.org, and this pastor brags about God saving him from a car crash. That's good, isn't it, that God saved him from a car crash?
Well, I would think so, yeah.
Of course, his wife is dead.
Uh-oh.
But God saved him from a car crash. Dr. Phil Kidd.
Yeah.
Dr. Phil Kidd,
Are you kidding me?
I'm not. Yeah, really? Are you kidding me? Of course, where did you get your new Jaguar anyway? Where did you get your Jaguar? And what's a pastor doing running around in a Jaguar? Oh, I'm sorry. I understand. God has blessed you. I get that. But God killed your wife and saved you. Here is what you are, Pastor Kid. Phil Kidd, Dr. Phil Kidd, you're a bonehead. That's what you are. You're actually another kind of head too, but I can't say that here.
Bonehead of the day.
I tell you, Bears, of all the things that dig hard against the grain of everything inside of me is this It's mind-numbing to me, and I just cannot understand even what must be going through the brain of people who, as you know, we watch, we have so much going on around the world, and people in accidents, and you know, half a busload killed, and you know, the other half live, or people surviving and dying in many various ways, accidents, but every combination of numbers surviving and not surviving. But every time I hear the comment afterwards, you know, here there's dead bodies laying around, like you said. And some idiot gets on there and talks about how that the Lord saved them. And that is so far from my thinking. I am so glad it is so far from my thinking.
Well, this bonehead carries on with his holy horseshit and says this. Just on the other, this is this idiot talking. He says, just on the other side of the guard cable is where my car stopped flipping and started spinning in circles. Now notice the mile marker on the interstate sign. The number is 5. That's the number of grace. I landed right on grace. You buffhead.
Oh,
and your wife landed on it too, on a bloody head.
Yeah.
And you okay.
Bonehead was deserved. Anymore. I'll be right back.
Gospel Revolution.
This week in the WTF department.
Worlds that fly.
Worlds that fly. Where we bring you all the news in the world of religion, one scandal at a time. Boneheads and hustlers, pastors, priests and perverts. Here's our next story. It comes from Australia, where they are having one of the most wonderful inquiries, a royal inquiry into Catholic pedophiles in the church messing up with kids. Now, I'm not going to give you the this is from www.news.com.au. I'm not going to give you the headline until I give you a few of the details. I want you to really relish the headline. There were 17 victims that testified, I think, in the last few days. One victim, now 70, said a Christian brother abused him weekly when he was 12 or 13. He would make me choose either the strap or sex education, and I always chose the latter because I didn't want to get belted. Mm. I should have taken the beltings.
My goodness.
Abuse survivor Philip Nagel said of the 33 boys pictured in his 1974 grade 4 class photograph at St. Alipius Primary School, 12 have died by suicide.
Oh.
Ridsdale is the name of this school chaplain, and four of the Christian brothers there who taught there were all pedophiles.
Right.
This Ridsdale character abused more than 50 kids as he was moved between 9 Victorian parishes over 3 decades and also abused an altar boy in Sydney. Now, Bishop Pell, who is the big old name down there, and others knew of this and kept switching him so that he could, I guess, so that he could meet some fresh meat. Mm. Now, are you ready? Are you ready for this bloody headline, mate?
Well, we got.
Here it is. It's breaking news, and it says, Bishop knew of clergy abuse, but he did not feel it was something that he needed to report to the police.
Goodness. Either these people are just the world's most prolific liars, or religion is that damaging to the brain. It's brain damage. If this would have taken place in any one of our sports clubs of here in America, whether it be football, baseball, basketball, you know, they... they wouldn't be trying to figure out how to repair what happened. They'd be shutting this place down completely, stem to stern.
And this is Cardinal Pell now. This bishop's a cardinal now. I guess everyone rises to their level of incompetence.
That's the stuff that Paul was talking about in, you know, when he talks about being the Pharisee of Pharisees. He actually lists all this accolades that we would sort of like, well, that's pretty commendable, Paul. And he says, well, I count it all, but, you know, and the actual word is dung.
Rubbish, yeah, we got.
Yeah, we clean that up. You know, we got to help God out. The reality is he saw it for what it was, and sadly, so many of us have a hard time acknowledging that self-effort and the life of God are pretty far apart.
Yeah, the real problem with religion is you're calling poop chocolate. Is that what you're saying?
I did not see that coming.
No, it's what it really is. You've got poo here, and you're going, this is chocolate. And people are eating it going, dang, I thought chocolate would taste better than this. Oh, well, you can't say that, because you're just being rebellious. You're just being a fool. You couldn't, no, I'm not.
You did.
I'm telling you. That's what we're doing. And it's the people who kept saying, you know what? I got to tell you, it tastes more like poo. I think that's great.
Wow.
That's great.
Wow.
And Paul could just say, oh, it was poo.
Yeah.
And then when the Galatians start eating poo again, it's like chocolate. He goes, oh, hold a minute. Yeah. No, not chocolate. Poo.
Not chocolate.
Not chocolate.
Not chocolate. This is great.
It is great because
it's the title right there. Not chocolate.
But we sit there with our little poo and we keep stirring it around going, you know, if we just add something here. We just add a little more sugar, a little more butter, this is going to be better chocolate.
No,
it's not ever.
No. It's never chocolate.
I'm gonna free fall out into nothing. I'm gonna leave this world for a while.
Hey, now here is a story. I just don't know. I'm going to put it in the WTF department.
Worlds that fly?
Yeah, fly apart if you apply any logic to them. Here, a Nebraska woman. I'm reading this from NBC News. A Nebraska woman files a suit against all homosexuals. A Nebraska woman identifying herself as the ambassador for plaintiffs. Wait for it. God and His Son Jesus Christ. Is suing all homosexuals on earth for breaking religious and moral laws, according to court records filed on Tuesday. This was just a couple of days ago. In the suit entered into the docket as Driscoll versus Homosexuals, Sylvia Ann Driscoll, 66, asks District Judge John M. Gerard to decide once and for all whether homosexuality is or isn't a sin. Hey, if you have to go to court, I mean, I know. Try to stop laughing, mate. Oh, that's too funny. Now these are clever Christians. They've sold all their goods and they've liquidated all their assets, and in preparation for a certain loss.
Yeah.
No wonder. I'm looking at the court docket here. Plaintiffs, Sylvia Ann Driscoll, ambassador for plaintiffs, God and his son Jesus Christ. Defendants are homosexuals, their given name, homosexuals, and their alias, gay.
Alias.
I mean, is there anything you can... No, there's nothing you can say to that. Let's move on.
Oh, Sylvia. No, let me talk. Sylvia.
I was afraid of that.
Sylvia, we are filing a countersuit.
On behalf of homosexuals?
On behalf of Jesus Christ himself, in of defamation of character. That you are bringing against the Lord Jesus Christ. You're defaming his character. You are stuck trying to figure out what sin is when Jesus did away with sin altogether. You're a little behind on your lawsuit, so we are going to have to countersue and sue you for defamation. Now, we'd have never done it if you hadn't brought this up.
Yeah, you started it, Sylvia.
But you started it, so we file a countersuit in the defamation of the character of Jesus Christ.
Gospel Revolution.
Hi there, Barris and Mike and Jeff and Gospel Revolution. This is Josh Penny, and I'm calling to leave a voicemail message about the gospel. And thought that came to my head today is that I am thankful that I don't have to do mental gymnastics and psycho-religious activities and exercises and weary myself with the business of denying the sovereign one who bought me. And that's really good because I'm not weary anymore. So that's my story. Sticking to it. Love you. Bye.
Mike, this next story is about a fellow called Rick Wiles. Have you ever heard of him?
No.
He's got he's an end times broadcaster. I mean, when you're an end, it's like the doom you wish for yourself, isn't it? He's an
at least he knows his job is temporary.
Oh, dear.
Or we hope it is, anyway.
And what he says is, we are at the end of the road as a nation. If the Supreme Court dares to defy Almighty God one more time, I'm telling you, it will be the last time. I dare you. Just do that once more. I believe I am speaking under the unction of the Holy Spirit, he continued. I'm telling you, there will be swift, sudden, and devastating consequences for the United States of America. It will be brought to its knees. There will be pain and suffering at a level we've never seen in this country. The word that I hear in my spirit is fire.
Fire.
Yeah, in his case, fire.
Far.
Far. Yeah. I do not know if it I love the way these guys give themselves an out. I mean, have the b****s to say what you're talking about, you jumped up bloody deacon from somewhere who is making money threatening people with the end of their bloody lives. Hey, listen, Rick Wiles, if you really believe it's going to happen, sign your mortgage over to me as at the date you believe that the time is going to end. Simple. Have you got the guts for that?
Yeah, exactly.
The word I hear in my spirit, he says, is fire. I don't know if it refers to riots or looting or war on American soil or, wait for it, a fireball from space. He told his listeners, prepare for the fire that will sweep across America if the United States Supreme Courts dare to defy God one more time and rule that homosexual marriage must be the day for homosexual, anti-homosexual rants and idiots. That homosexual marriage is a constitutional right. Well, Rick Wiles, what we're going to award you with today is...
Bonehead of the Day!
Yes, and also Rick. Is that his name?
Mr. Wiles to you, but you could call him Rick if, as long as he's not listening. hang on. Mr. Wiles, that's, we established that last week.
Mr. Wiles. Mr. Wiles, I wish you hadn't have done this because now... I have to pull out Isaiah on you.
Oh, I thought it was going to be another lawsuit.
No, we have to condemn every word that just proceeded out of your mouth. Isaiah said that it's my heritage to condemn your... Hey, Ricky Poo.
Ricky Poo.
It is my job to condemn, not you. It is my job to condemn every word that just came out of your mouth. Every mouth that rises in judgment, it is the heritage of every human being to condemn your words that have risen in judgment. Because to say that God is angry after the cross, you again should go join Sister Sally or whoever she was, and we'll just put both of you in our lawsuit for defamation of character against the name of Jesus Christ. This is idiotic. Now, let me tell you something. Will you come on this show and talk to us? Well, I don't know which way the Supreme Court's going to rule, but let's say they do rule in favor of gay marriage. Will you come on our show? Will you come on our show and answer for this false prophecy that you've given? Or just let us take you out back and stone you to death.
Stoning's good for false prophets.
Recommended, I hear.
Have you heard the latest videos from the Gospel Revolution? You need to.
If you're wondering why I'm not on too many PowerCasts, it's because I'm spending too much time on YouTube and not watching it. I'm performing videos on YouTube. And if you have not seen one of those videos, you need to go to our video channel. Just log into YouTube and type in Gospel Revolution 1, all one word, Gospel Revolution and the numeral 1. Or you can link to it from our homepage on our website, gospelrevolution.com. There's a link to our YouTube channel. So, everybody, stay in touch with us in every way. Subscribe to our newsletters and listen to our podcasts and watch our videos on YouTube. And we'll see you everywhere.
If you need a lift in your spirit and want to have a great day, listen to thegospelrevolution.com.
Michael, golly, we got so much here. We have another WTF department story here.
Worlds that fly?
Absolutely apart when you try to apply any logic to them. In this story, where we bring you, and look, you don't get this. Tell me anywhere else you get this, family. You don't get this information anywhere else on the web. But we bring it to you. We bring you all the news in the world of religion, one scandal at a time. Boneheads and hustlers, pastors, priests and perverts. We give you the lot. Here is Mark Driscoll. Now, you remember Mark. Mark was the Martinet who ruled the Mars Hill Church. And after a bunch of his pastors and ex-pastors got together and ruled that he had been nothing more than a little jumped-up Napoleon running the church, he used to love talking about sex. He used to love doing marriage seminars and speaking about sex and telling. This was a guy that said every Christian woman should give her man oral sex. It was her duty to do that. And he ran a church of multiple thousands of people, but
mostly men, I bet.
Oh dear. The churches he ran, of course, all went their separate ways, and they're dying now on the vine. But guess what? He's back. Oh yeah. The resigned senior pastor of the imploded Seattle-based Mars Hill Church is resurfacing on the evangelical lecture. Yeah, why? Because that's where you get your money. What he did was he pulled all his old sermons off the Mars Hill website before it closed down, and then he's got it on his website now. Well, I suppose that's okay. He preached the sermons. Why not? So ownership.
Nobody else should be held responsible for that crap.
Oh,
did really? I say that?
Out loud, I think. This is a guy that paid a six-figure sum to the New York Times bestsellers list to get his book at the top. I mean, what a lying scumbag this guy is. But guess what? Brian Houston, remember Brian Houston from Hillsong Sydney? He's the guy whose daddy was a pedophile and he tried to cover him. He's got him in there for a super special presentation.
Oh, my goodness.
Mate, this is incestuous. This, wow. Anyway.
Are you saying I was fortunate that I was denied return to the Hillsong Church?
Well, you remember what they told you, don't you?
Yes.
The Calf Path. One day, through the primeval wood, a calf walked home, as good calves should, but made a trail all bent askew, a crooked trail, as all calves do. Since then, 200 years have fled, and I infer the calf is dead, but still he left behind his trail, and thereby hangs my moral tale. The trail was taken up next day by a lone dog that passed that way, and then a wise bellwether sheep pursued the trail o'er vale and steep, and drew the flock behind him too, as good bellwethers always do. And from that day o'er hill and glade, through these old woods a path was made, and many men wound in and out, and dodged and turned and bent about, and uttered words of righteous wrath, because 'twas such a crooked path, but still they followed, do not laugh, the first migrations of that calf, and through this winding woodway stalked, because he wobbled when he walked. This forest path became a lane that bent and turned again. This crooked lane became a road where many a poor horse with his load toiled on beneath the burning sun and travelled some 3 miles in one, and thus a century and a half they trod the footsteps of that calf. The years passed on in swiftness fleet. The road became a village street, and this, before men were aware, a city's crowded thoroughfare, and soon the central street was this of a renowned metropolis, and men 2 centuries and a half trod in the footsteps of that calf. Each day 100,000 a rout followed the zigzag calf about, and o'er his crooked journey went the traffic of a continent. 100,000 men were led by one calf near 3 centuries dead. They followed still his crooked way and lost 100 years a day, for thus such reverence is lent to well-established precedent. A moral lesson this might teach, were I ordained and called to preach, for men are prone to go it blind along the calf paths of the mind, and work away from sun to sun to do what other men have done. They follow in the beaten track, and out and in and forth and back, and still their devious course pursue to keep the path that others do. But how the wise old wood gods laugh who saw the first primeval calf. Ah, many things this tale might teach, but I'm not ordained to preach.
Oh, my goodness.
James Washburn, our buddy Pep, says this to us. Don't know if you guys have considered looking into an audiobook for one. Have we, mate?
It has been brought up. I'm not sure that there was discussion as to who would do the reading of it. And
I can recommend someone.
Well, I don't recommend me, that's for sure.
I recommend Pep. I mean, what a reading voice Pep Washburn has.
Yes. Well, see, this goes back to the old Word of Faith days. If the Lord showed it to you, it means he wants you to do it.
There you go, Pep. Hey, listen, by the way, I also need help in, you saw last week's show, I just dropped a whole bunch of stuff out and just made it one long conversation. Marcel Rose has helped me with some music. Mel Martin and Denise Martin, they've helped me with some jingles. Sheridan Smith helped me with a jingle. But I need more help if that's okay with you guys. I would love to ask you to keep your eye out for stories on the web that you think we might all enjoy and send them in to me. And it was our brand new correspondent from the South, James McCollum, who sent us that story about the Auburn woman filing a federal case against homosexuals. James, thank you, buddy, and keep it up. Love the stories you bring. You brought me another story, which we'll be probably bringing next week, but right now we're just trying to get through everything that we have today. Now, here is a question that I don't even know whether we can... What the heck? This comes from...
Yep.
And he says, "Hello, guys, can you explain why Mark 16:16 says whoever does not believe will be condemned? Why is Jesus saying that if he was condemned for man's sin at the cross? Could you please explain this verse? Mark 16:16 says, whoever believes and is baptized will be saved, but whoever does not believe will be condemned. Thanks."
Barris, I think you have a quick answer for this already, because I know that this is an area that you've done quite a bit of study in, and I think I know what it's going to be, but I'm wanting to hear your answer.
Firstly, we have to define what the condemnation is. Now, here is a little exercise for all of our family. Go to one of your Christian friends and very sweetly say, but don't let them think you're trying to trap them into an answer, but that's probably what you're trying to do. It's what I do. It doesn't work very well for me, but it does leave an impression. Ask them what John 3:16 means, and then go and say, well, what does John 3:17 mean? You know, he that believes will not be condemned, but he that believes not was condemned already. And ask folks this: what, in your opinion, is the condemnation for people who don't believe? Now, if you're speaking to Christians, I'll tell you that Not 9 times out of 10, 95 times out of 100, in fact, probably 100 times out of 100, people will say, hell. The condemnation is hell. If you don't believe, you'll go to hell. And once they've defined what the condemnation is, just very gently, without trying to sound like a smarty pants, take them gently to verse 19 that says, and this is the condemnation. It's like Jesus, looking down the avenues of time, knew that we'd be so stupid that he would actually have to put this in black and white. And he says, and this is the condemnation, that you'll live in darkness. What is the condemnation that he's talking about? He's talking about living in darkness instead of coming to the light. Now, whoever believes and is baptized will be saved, but whoever does not believe will be condemned. To what? To living in darkness. That's why we preach the gospel of grace and peace. We don't want people living in darkness. We want the whole world to know that they are holy, righteous, and perfect. Now, the second thing that we need to look at in this verse is the three words, and is baptized. So it says, whoever believes and is baptized will be saved. And this is the second thing I ask Christians. Do you believe that? And they say, oh, no, you can't just take something that's only one verse when there's hundreds of other verses that say, believe and you'll be saved. And then some people will say, but those words were added later. Oh, really? So if they were added later, what other words could have been added? How do you know that you can trust anything in there? I tell you, one of the most amusing things for me is seeing people tie themselves up into knots, trying to explain things that are inexplicable. There are many theological giants much wiser than me who believe that this whole section was added at a much later date and was not even in the original scriptures. How do I explain that verse? That's how I explain it.
Yeah. Well, let me follow up in that first part, Barris, that you brought out in the continuation of challenging people to look further into the book of John. And Jesus said, this is the condemnation. And that is to, what was the words?
And this is a condemnation, that light has come into the world and men loved darkness rather than light because their deeds were evil.
So the condemnation of the world
was to live in darkness.
Was to live in darkness.
And actually to love darkness.
Yes. Now, I've taught on the book of John, and we always run through all of those verses and then drag people all the way, kicking and screaming sometime, all the way up to John chapter 12, because you can't interpret John 3:16, John 1, John 4, John 5, unless you make it to John chapter 12. And in John chapter 12, verse 35, it says, then said Jesus unto them, yet a little while is the light with you. Walk while you have the light, lest darkness come upon you. For he that walketh in darkness, now we know that that not believing is walking in darkness. Now we get to know what walking in darkness is.
What is it?
For he that walketh in darkness knoweth not where he's going.
So, what is the condemnation?
Not knowing where you're going.
There you go. Love it. Yeah, family, if you think that Mike or myself or Jeff or anyone else, Vic or Jackie or Pep, if you think that we say some wise things at times, let me assure you, it never all happened at once. It happened when we went back and tried to unteach ourselves what we had been taught so thoroughly wrong for so long.
Yeah, for sure.
The older you get, the more your brain cells get filled up with garbage, and it's hard to dump those things. I've tried to do one of those dumps where you just go and plug in somewhere and just let all the old crap out and make room for the new. It just doesn't work that way. You got to override it somehow, and I'm working on that.
Hi, Doris. This is Rhonda Liske. I live in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I was raised in a fundamentalist Christian church and home. From early childhood, I was introduced to a God with a split personality. He was an unconditionally loving God on one hand, but over on the other hand, he had conditions for me to meet in order to obtain his favor. Throughout my Christian experience, I would get glimpses of the gospel, only to have them snatched away with teachings that condemned me. I remember seeing these contradictions from a very early age. But whenever I questioned them, I was shut down with a trite answer or an outright disapproving, "You're being the devil's advocate, Rhonda. Stop it." I learned quickly to keep my concerns to myself and to not rock the boat. I became a good little Christian so I could win the approval of my family, my church, but more importantly, so I could earn the approval of my Heavenly Father. My Christian experience was a roller coaster ride. Up when I felt I was doing all I needed to do, and down when I felt I was failing to win God's approval. I know that this is the typical Christian experience, and most people coming out of religion know what I'm talking about. The constant vacillating between self-righteousness and condemnation was a mental anguish that I would not wish on my worst enemy. But instead of walking away from the cause of this mental anguish to get relief, I pushed further into it, thinking that if I only dedicated myself more to God, then this turmoil would stop. So I decided that I needed to serve God on the mission field. I enrolled in a Bible college in Australia to get training for a life as a missionary. I arrived in Australia 2 weeks shy of my 18th birthday. I was on a high because I thought this was going to be the answer to finding intimacy and acceptance with God. But 2 weeks later, on my birthday, I was brutally raped. I spent over 2.5 weeks in the hospital recovering. My high had come crashing down around me, and I never felt such condemnation in all my life. I couldn't wrap my mind around why this had happened to me, when I was trying so hard to follow God's plan for my life. I found little comfort in my belief system or my God. I decided to not tell my parents what had happened to me, telling myself that I wanted to save them from the hurt of it all. But looking back, I wonder if my choice to not tell them was because I was afraid they would judge me. After all, how could I expect them not to judge me when I was judging myself? During the next 2 months, I struggled with the question of why. What had I done to deserve this? It was at this time that I found out I was pregnant from the rape. For the first time in my life, I got angry with God, and I started to blame him. At first, I felt like I was going to be struck by lightning for daring to shake my fist at God. For months, as I lashed out at God, he started reminding me of all of the glimpses of the gospel I had seen through the years. These glimpses felt like a shower on a dry and thirsty soul. For the first time in my life, I was starting to see how I was accepted and loved by God apart from my performance. I stopped many of the things that I had been taught that I needed to do to be close to God, but here I was, never feeling more unconditionally loved by him or closer to him. I still struggled with condemnation. Duh, I was still attending Bible college, of course I would struggle with condemnation. I heard it every day. And thinking that I must have done something to deserve my circumstances, I struggled with that also. But overall, I was starting to understand the truth. I was over 7 months pregnant when an evangelist visited the church that I was assigned to by the college. After the service, this man came up to me and said that he needed to speak to me, and could he take me out for lunch the next day. I was a little surprised because I'd never met this man before, but I agreed. At the restaurant, before the waitress could even bring our drink order, he opened up by telling me that the pastor and he had a talk about me and that he knew my situation. He then proceeded to tell me that God had spoken to him and that he knew why I'd been raped and had gotten pregnant. He said that I had sinned against God and that this was my punishment. He went on to tell me that he knew that I was planning to give the babies up for adoption. I was having twins. But that was not God's plan for me, that I needed to, as he put it, take my lumps and raise the babies myself. I was shocked, and I didn't know what to say. I had been taught my whole life to never question a man of God. I went away from that meeting reeling. When I got back to the dorm, I started to weep. I felt crushed once again under the weight of God's disapproval. But then the thought came to me, Rhonda, why would you choose to serve a God that would use rape to punish you? In a moment of what I can only describe as crystal clarity, I thought, I wouldn't. I would not choose to serve a God like that. I recalled how God had been showing me how he loved and accepted me without any strings attached the last few months. Something inside me said, Rhonda, you have listened your whole life to what others have told you who God is. But now you need to start letting God show you who he is. So I stopped doing all the things I had been taught to do in order to find favor with God. So I stopped, and the most amazing thing started to happen. I started to literally see God in everything and everyone around me. All of my life, I'd been told that darkness needed to be separated from light, that I needed to disassociate myself from unbelievers so I would not become tainted. But for the first time in my life, I truly felt fellowship with others, and they were non-believers. I think, looking back at this, that I was able to see this oneness and this unity of all people once I had been able to accept the oneness and unity I myself had with God apart from works. It was years later that I was introduced to Mike Williams and to his ministry, and it showed me in scriptures, finally, what my heart had already known for years. What has the gospel meant to me? It has meant the end of mental turmoil over how God views me. It has ended a life that was enslaved to self-righteousness and to condemnation. It has freed me to accept all people for who they are and to know that they are redeemed of the Lord. It has freed me from the idea that when life stinks, that it has to do with God, that it has to do with how God feels about me. It has freed me from that. It has freed me to forgive what I once thought was unforgivable and to make peace with my past. I have been freed to be with and marry the man of my dreams without fear of what the religious world or anyone else thinks. I am free to raise my child to be himself, not some carbon copy of what someone else thinks he needs to be. Finally, I am free to be myself and to live my life the way it was meant to be lived, free for freedom's sake. Thank you. Find your guiding inspiration in a place where dreams are made with a lifetime's preparation. It's no time to be afraid. Put our differences behind us.
We got an email this week from Sean. I think it's Sean, S-H-E-A-N Smith. And this is a long, very long email, so I'm just going to touch the highlights, but I wanted to share this today, Mike. I realize, he says, I realize that you're all busy and that many folks probably send you all testimonies about realizing the truth of the gospel and the new covenant that began on the cross. Y'all's scriptural wisdom has helped me to unchristianize myself, so thank you. The following is a little long, but not too long. He goes on a little bit later to say, while in seminary, I pastored a small church for 1 month, short of 3 years. I got an undergraduate degree with a major in pastoral ministries and then began work on a Master of Divinity degree. I completed 44 hours on my MDiv program, and then my wife's dad got cancer. This was traumatic for my wife, so we decided to give up my plans to get the Masters of Divinity and move back home so my wife could be near her dad. By that time, I was tired of theology and the church anyway, so leaving was more of a relief than anything else. Oh, we get that. We really do get that, Sean. And by the way, it doesn't matter how many testimonies we get from people. You guys, send us your testimony, or testimonial, I'd like to call it, rather than a testimony. Mike likes to say, there's only one testimony. There's plenty of stories, but really there's only one testimony. Mm-hmm. Now I'm free. He says, seminary was the catalyst for me leaving Christianity. I had taken an exegetical class on the book of Jeremiah one semester, and that screwed me up for the better. The whole class had to do a research paper on Jeremiah 31 through 34. Hmm. That was my first foray into the new covenant.
My goodness.
How about that? I discovered that the new covenant was between God and all people without anything or anyone in between them. Mm. God would teach me himself because he fired all the human shepherds. I love it, mate. The rest of the time I was in seminary, this nagged at my soul. I could not reconcile the new covenant with Christianity. I got seriously depressed because of it. I tried asking clergy I respected about the Jeremiah passage, but all they said was, you ask too many questions and that will ruin your faith.
My goodness.
Well, my faith got ruined, which made me know the truth that set me free. Going on, and I'm just touching the highlights, Sean. I'm sorry, we just don't have the time. It took 17 years for me to shed Christianity completely. It is no wonder to me that it took so long to leave Christianity, since I can look back and see the grasp Christianity has on the world. Now I understand the new covenant completely. For the first time ever, I know there is a difference between Jesus Christ's gospel and Christianity's gospel. Mm-hmm. Jesus Christ, good news, means that there is no death or hell for any person ever born, regardless of what a person has or has not done. It means that no person will experience the horrors of rejecting Christianity's gospel, which amounts to eternal suffering in the fires of hell. Brackets, a farce.
Mm-hmm.
My life has culminated into what Paul described as Philippians 3:8. Like Paul, all of my self-righteousness and credentials mm-hmm. became crapola to me. I love it, Sean. I spend my time slinging Christianity's dung out of my life. I am now, as I'm reading this, I'm thinking of Richard John Mull. I am now unstudying the Bible so I can proclaim Jesus Christ's actual good news. I am 100% disabled veteran of Christianity's military, U.S. Marine Corps.
Yeah.
So I don't work outside the home. I have nothing but time to do what I want to do. I'm also a writer and will be getting back into podcasting and blogging when I feel like I've been re-educated enough. Hey, Sean, your re-education is total. You have inside you mm-hmm. the truth. Follow your heart. I love what you're writing here. He says, this gospel has changed my life and way of thinking about other people and me. I'm not very popular with my extended family. That is mostly Southern Baptist clergymen. Oh buddy, I preached. I know just what you mean, mate. Keep broadcasting the good news. Sean Smith, P.S. I'll be seeing you all in Cullman, May 16 and 17.
Oh, wonderful. Hey, that means if I fall down and break my neck, bad confession, that means that
Charlie Caps has a word for you, you know.
That means we got somebody there that could take over and teach the whole thing without a blink of an eye. In fact, I think we got a whole lineup of people who could actually.
Oh, man.
I could just sit down and listen. Oh, my goodness. I hate to say it this way, but I'm real proud of you guys. You explode my heart with joy to hear this gospel come back up out of you, and it's be yours now. My book is entitled The Gospel According to Mike, but now it is The Gospel According to Sean. It's The Gospel According to Bears. It's The Gospel According to Jeff. It's The Gospel According to, and folks, I think this is the way it was always supposed to be, is that this gospel go into you so strong that it comes out of you so strong is now your gospel. This is good stuff. Thank you so much for letting us know your journey. Goodness, you've got me wanting to go back and study Jeremiah now. Goodness gracious.
And Sean, I want to underline everything that Mike just said. Your letter is just what we live for.
Yeah.
And we love having you on board. Thank you so much, friend. And you need anything, remember the phone numbers and don't hesitate to call us.
Gospel Revolution.
Here, Michael, from Ontario, London, Ontario, Canada, is an email from Cherie Leona Antone. And she says, "Hello, Mike. My question is, how do you know that the Bible is true? I have a bit of a problem believing that the Old Testament happened. I am not interested in worshipping a God like that, people killing in his name and so forth. I have my doubts because of my own experience with mental illness. I was diagnosed schizophrenic 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. Up till then, I used to be normal and believed in God. I used to feel very loved by God and at peace every waking moment. However, since my illness, all that changed. I don't feel the love that I used to anymore. I know that the mind can make up just about anything it wants. During my severe illness, I managed to create a whole new life that had no truth to it whatsoever. I'm back to reality now. I know who I am now. I don't know what happened to cause all this. Why do you believe that there was a Jesus that died on a cross? You see, I think my mind made up the God that I wanted to exist, and that was all. Why do you believe?"
Cherie, first off, Cherie, thank you so much for writing. Let me first say to you that you're writing this letter to a organization and people who head up an organization who have experienced a great deal of what you have. And that is mental illness. We've experienced mental illness of depression and probably many other things also. Glenn Klein, who's been with the Gospel Revolution for many years, openly talks about dealing with bipolar disorder. And to his credit, he openly talks about it. Mm-hmm. And helps other people by doing so. So first off, the most important thing in your letter to me was you. And I rather than try to convince you of anything, let me say this to you. If you have found any degree of peace at all from dealing with schizophrenia or any other mental illness, number one, we applaud you, sweetheart. Goodness gracious, we stand with you 100%. If questioning whether or not the air exists is a part of your process of being able to come to peace, some peace inside of yourself, let me tell you, we'd question whether air exists or not, just to stand with you. You got to understand, the gospel isn't about doctrine. The gospel is about people. It is about a very powerful understanding that causes you to know who you are. You said in your letter to us, you now know who you are better than any other time. I think it's because you've lost most of your Christian doctrine. But and that I applaud. But let me suggest that in the process of your journey, that I've held on to the things that you have mentioned. I've thrown away many of the things that also helped bring about peace of mind for me. But if there's people standing here still believing this, and we pass through the dark side of mental illness to get here, let me ask you to consider the possibility that there's still something here that's beneficial to you. And other than that, the only thing I've got to say to you, hun, your letter touches my heart to the core, and I support you wherever you are.
Cherie, thanks a lot. This is, these emails that we're reading today have touched, moved, and inspired me. And I'm here, sitting here looking at Mike, and I know that he's also similarly affected. Recently at Calgary, we taped a couple of messages regarding why we believe in the fundamentals of redemptionism. If you gave the gospel of grace and peace a name, for us it is redemptionism. So it's only a word. That's all it is.
Yeah.
Like yourself, we have thrown off the shackles of Christianity. And like Sean said earlier, we are still all dealing with the crapola and finding ways of getting it out of our system. It doesn't come out automatically, but frankly, I suggest the more we hear the gospel, the further into the background it recedes. For me, I can only speak for me. For me, and I covered these in the series that we just that were recorded in Calgary. You'll find them on our product page. Michael has generously offered that we can put my messages up there as a separate entity, and that's such an honor. Thanks, Mike. But what I dealt with were two things. I dealt with what we call the scriptures. That is the Old Testament at large, generally speaking, and the New Testament, and why we believe that the scriptures are quite reliable. Now, as to the God that the Old Testament depicts, there are reasons, and for me, they're quite credible reasons to not throw the baby out with the bathwater. The second thing we covered was the resurrection of Jesus Christ. The compelling evidence that can only be reached at not by historical facts, but by overwhelming circumstantial evidence, has left me believing that Jesus Christ was a man who lived, died, and then rose again. Now, for me, I'm not saying it's for everyone. For me, they became stanchions. They became landmarks that have allowed me to place my full confidence in the fact that Jesus Christ has set me free. Cherie, thank you for your letter. Please write us again.
Yes, regardless of your conclusions, we love you, and you don't have to believe a thing we say to be a part of the gospel revolution. We've got we've got atheists that are gospel revolutionaries. this is not a place where that you got to think like us to be a part of this powerful thing that we call gospel revolution. You can believe anything you want, and you can still be a part. And we're not going to take a position of arguing with anyone about anything. The most valuable thing about this, as we said, and as Barris has affirmed to you, the most important thing about your letter and about anything about the gospel revolution is you.
Yeah. All my days I've been searching to find out what this life is worth. Through the books and battles of time, I've made up my mind. I don't condemn, I don't convert. This is a calling, have you heard? Bring all the lovers to the fold. 'Cause no one is gonna lose their soul.
Can take it all. don't have to believe it. I don't want to fight.
Last email today, mate, comes from Steve Davis. Now, Steve Davis was a guy that came onto our Facebook group and got all... I'll let him tell you. Steve says, thanks to all of the Gospel Revolution, I have been aware of the website since 2012. Either way, back in 2005, I was exposed to Grace Teachers by a person who was a friend of mine who I believe Mike knows somehow. I found myself becoming a critical Christian guy that always found myself questioning the actions of the church I was going to. After hearing about Grace, I had a great few months. Then the shit hit the fan after slipping back into legalism, which I never fully left. It's all bizarre and utter chaos that cannot be fully summed up here. Again, Steve, I'm just hitting the highlights because we wanted to deal with your letter and address it, but it is a long one. After I got over that, I thought I knew the love of, and the grace of God for believers only. I quit going to church in 2008 because of a 52-week interferon treatment that came with side effects that were like mental torture again. And that church stuff clearly didn't help. And it was a waste of time for me because I disagreed with every message anyway, but I was more afraid of being lonely, so it took a catastrophe to get me out of that place. All my dealings with Christians have led me to think I cannot trust even one of them. I was afraid of the redemption of the whole world stuff because I felt totally out of control, and thank God for that, mate. And it challenged all that I had trusted in, resulting in even more confusion for a time. But I finally realized the real good news was better than I had ever hoped. I know that the judgment and wrath and all of that other stuff ended at the cross. It is finished. I really got a lot out of the book one, The Gospel According to Mike, and I've been reading those 95 theses after that, off and on, for the past year or so.
Boy, he's been digging.
He has been digging. You bet. I love it. Progress was slow because I questioned everything. Good for you, buddy, and don't you ever stop questioning everything. In fact, if you ever want to find out who has a rule over you, ask questions.
Yeah.
Every person I think that goes to church should ask lots and lots of questions. But he goes on to say, progress was slow because I questioned everything, but my heart kept confirming the truth. Also, I had a lot of other hobbies because I just didn't give a shit enough to spend my whole life thinking about God stuff anymore. I have still got some mood swings, and I've had to take an early retirement because of PTSD. But at least I no longer have any concerns about judgment, not only for myself, but for all people. I can see why I used to believe in a God who is treacherous, but I am so glad to find out that monster was never God to begin with. Cherie, maybe this is something for all of us.
Yeah, for sure.
Back to Steve. Sorry for being so critical after joining the Facebook group in the recent months. Oh, I joined last year and I left because of all the strange ideas thrown around. I just didn't want the hassle of more religious talk, but I'm realizing there is nothing to be afraid of. Also, while I believed the redemption of the world, I keep seeing more and more, like realizing the New Testament is not really scripture. I don't think many realize how big these steps are for recovering religious people. I've been through so damn much, I just want to enjoy life now. So I may come and go from the Facebook group from time to time, but I really do like knowing I am not alone in the world. I can feel miserable at the drop of a dime, but right now I believe the truth and I'm happy. I would like to say that religion is totally gone from me and that I totally get the grace of God and the gospel and rest for my soul. I haven't the slightest clue and I don't care either. Life is what it is. If I am only able to play video games, build computers, raise my daughter, love my wife, take anxiety pills till I die, I would be just fine with that option over struggling in a living hell. However, I'm glad I'm free today. I wish you all the best. Steve. Steve Davis. Oh, my God.
You know, Barris, I of all that he said, which, number one, what a gut-level reality of honesty from any human being that this man is poured out to the whole world here, and that's an amazing thing to do. But do you notice that he talked about taking anti-anxiety pills and being restricted, but he said this is better than living in that hell? Wait, I thought that hell was having anxiety and being restricted by things like that. But folks, let me tell you something. I've had anxiety. I know what it's like. Goodness gracious, stage fright still is a part of my life. And but that was never the hell in my life. The hell in my life was trying to measure the anxiety to God's approval in my life. And that was the hell. And I certainly understand that somebody can go through anxiety, you can go through schizophrenia, you can go through every type of mental illness and not go through the hell that religion adds to that. Well said, my friend. Goodness, we need the cheering section to just pipe up here.
Can I get an amen?
There you go.
That's what the homeless boys choir of Nashville had to say about that.
I knew they'd be excited.
And so it is that we must leave you, family and friends. Don't forget to visit www.thetruegospel.net and get your copy of Robert Hines' fantastic pub. Hey, there's another couple of people. We saw Robert Hines down there at Cullman. We saw Michael Bond shaken. My name is Bond, shaken but not stirred. Yeah. I couldn't get, mate, I can't wait till the next get together. I'll be there with bells on. Don't forget to visit www.thetruegospel.net and get your copy of Robert Hines' fantastic publication, Redemption, A Declaration for All, Not a Choice for a Few. We love it. We make nothing out of it, but we just want you to enjoy it as well. You know, you, our listeners, are the real stars of the Gospel Revolution. You may be a virgin listener or have been following the message for years, but if you're a virgin giver, we'd like to ask you to break the drought and call our office at area code 321-220-4373 and to speak to Jeffrey about how you can join the amazing people who keep this gospel of grace and peace going out every single week. $1 a day, nothing to most people, but to us it makes all the difference between business as usual and reaching so many more new ears with the sounds of freedom. You want to leave a message for Mike or myself or a question for him to answer? Dial area code 234-564-0971 and leave a voicemail. Our web address is www.gospelrevolution.com and on Facebook we are at Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. Thanks to Marcel Roos in the Netherlands, All the Gospel All the Time is being broadcast 24-7 at myradiostream.com/gospelrevolution. But now it's good night from myself, Beres Bartlett, from the GR Studios in Nashville, Tennessee.
And it is good night from Michael Williams right here in good old Houston, Texas, where we have officially declared Texas is no longer in a drought after many years. So hang in there, California. Your turn's coming. We love you guys. Thank you so very much. And again, thank you guys at Cullman. I learned at Cullman that Bob Hines' subtitle for his book was inspired by none other than our own Jeff Robertson. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Here is I was so jealous of this title when Bob came out with it. And now I'm mad because Jeff gave it to him instead of me.
Go for it.
So thank you, guys. Goodness gracious. The only reason the names came up on this program is because they were the ones that happened to pop up this morning in an early morning mind. And yes, we are recording in the morning, pretending it's evening. So thank you so very much. We'll look forward to seeing you again. We're preparing for good old Calgary, Alberta, folks. You will not want to miss this one, that is for sure. We love you. Look forward to seeing you next week.
We hope you enjoyed today's PowerCast, but if you didn't, remember, just because you're offended does not mean you are right. So if you prefer learning how to think to being told what to think, then join us again next week. Same time, same channel, where we'll do the same thing all over again.
That,